Welcome everyone. Thank you for coming to participate in this seminar on Vaishnav etiquette and particularly with a focus on Vaishnav relationships. Sorry, we're off to a late start this evening. Actually, we were ready on time, but we heard that some of you got held up, so we waited for a while before coming. But thank you for coming, and thank you to the organizers, to Kush and Vidura and Namacharya and Kishori and everyone else who's helped to organize this. We hope you'll find it interesting. Right. Now, we will tomorrow. Unfortunately, we couldn't get together today. The overview book. But tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll have that. So tonight though, basically what we'll do is more like a general introduction. And I see many of you, quite a few of you, have got notebooks and so on and pens. That's good. That's very good, particularly tonight because we don't have the overview book. So you might like, if you've got a pen and paper, you might like to make a note of the main headings that we're going to have a look at this evening. First of all, we'll give a definition of etiquette, Vaishnav etiquette. Then we'll explain how the effort to cultivate Vaishnav etiquette is an important part of sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means the practice of devotional service. Then, point number three, we'll try to make the point that a very essential part of Vaishnav etiquette is avoiding aparad or offenses. Aparad. Aparadha actually is the word really. Radha, of course. Radha means to worship. Radha Rani. Rani means the queen. She's the queen of worshippers. So Radha means to worship, and Appa indicates against that. Like there's Appa Sampradaya, if you're familiar with these terms a bit, the Sanskrit terms. Appa Sampradaya. Sampradaya means the spiritual line of succession coming down through history, and Appa Sampradaya means it's just some nonsense line. It's not a real line. It may look to some people like it is, but it really isn't. It's just some nonsense. So aparad. Aparad means against worship, against devotional service. So Vaishnava etiquette then naturally involves avoiding aparad, which is a bit of a science. It's a bit of a science, actually, so we'll have a look at that to some degree. Then, number four, we'll discuss a little bit how it is the ornament of a devotee. It glorifies the devotees and lends beauty and like that in a transcendental sense to the devotees. Then point number five, we'll talk about how we are going to apply this and or look at this subject in the context of this particular seminar. In other words, we're looking at etiquette. There's so many etiquettes, but we're going to be looking at etiquette in terms of Vaishnav relationships. So we'll talk about that. And then, well, we'll see how it goes time-wise, but if there's time, then we'll talk about some basic etiquettes. So that's more or less what we're going to be looking at tonight, I think. Let's see how it goes. Let's see how the time goes. Now, this word etiquette, I assume you're basically familiar with what this word etiquette means. I had a look in the dictionary just to get it right. Here is what the Random House dictionary says about etiquette. Conventional requirements as to proper social behavior. A prescribed or accepted code of usage in matters of ceremony. The code of ethical behavior among the members of a profession. For example, medical etiquette. Then, synonyms from the thesaurus. Procedure, rules of behavior, protocol, conventions, proprieties, manners, usages, decorum, courtesy, good form, good taste. Antonyms, some antonyms, the opposite, boorishness. No, and I don't mean Afrikaans either. But boorishness, that, you know, just being a real schlep, a real schmuck. Rudeness, impoliteness, vulgarity, indecorum. So I think we get the idea, right? Two left feet. Madhavi Prabhu, one of our god brothers, who we've been very close to for many years, he refers to, you know how there's foot and mouth disease? You heard of that? Amongst the animals. So he refers to foot in mouth disease. So this is antonym, the opposite of what is etiquette. So, yes, now we're looking at a definition, right? We're looking at a definition here. So, now just as a matter of interest, just so I know what I'm up against, sort of, how many of you have done the senior certificate in the Bhaktivedanta College? Put your hand up, please. Oh, so many of you. So you already know what Vaishnav etiquette's all about then. Gee, whiz, maybe you should give the class. Right, so our seminar, in fact, is not entirely, of course, but in many respects going to be based on the overview book that you already used. Although, you know, actually your overview book is an abbreviated version of another book, and your overview book kind of doesn't really go into much depth, at least, about the Vaishnav relationship side of etiquette. Not so much. But in the original book, which is by Bhakti Churumaj, it goes more, at least, into that. And this is really what we're going to focus on. Vaishnav etiquette is described by Sanatana Goswami. He is our authority, actually, on the subject of, like, how to do it, Krishna consciousness, even in the broadest sense. Sanatana Goswami, particularly the more basic and fundamental and earlier types of considerations. Rupa Goswami goes into the subject of devotional service more beyond just the very early stages, but Sanatana Goswami really looks at the early stages in great detail, particularly in one book called Hari Bhakti Vilas. So Sanatana Goswami, he gives a very nice definition. It's like a definition, at least, one way of looking at what Vaishnav etiquette is. Try and make a note of this, and I think it'll help make the subject make more sense in general. Vaishnav etiquette is the natural behavior of a pure devotee. I think that's a very nice type of definition or way of seeing it, at least. The natural behavior of a pure devotee. Spontaneously, a pure devotee will act in a way which is, according to the etiquette, very proper and correct and according to the protocols, the rules, and so on like that, but spontaneously, in a very natural way, it just flows. In fact, this word, this term, Vaishnav etiquette, is our translation of a particular word used, Sanskrit word used by Sanatana Goswami in his writings on the subject. And I imagine some of you here would know what is that Sanskrit term that Sanatana Goswami is translating. I mean, we are translating as Vaishnav etiquette. Put your hand up, please, someone. Yes. Shudacha. Not exactly. Sadacha. Shudacha, you know, just happens to mean pure activity, but sadacha has a somewhat deeper meaning even than should acha. Sad means eternal. So sadacha means eternal activity. Or in other words, it means how the people act. Acha means to act. How the people act, how they conduct themselves in the kingdom of God. The eternal standard of activities. So, this is a bit of a definition then, isn't it? I think quite a nice definition. So now, to go on to the second part, it's part of sadhana bhakti. So we have to learn sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means the practice of devotional service in the sense of learning and developing like that, practicing. So in Krishna consciousness, or when we come to Krishna consciousness, we're coming from material life, from material existence. And our natural ways of acting, or at least say our conditioned ways of conducting ourselves in day-to-day life in this world, in many ways they're opposed to the proper standards of activity in the kingdom of God. In so many ways. So, just like in sadhana bhakti, the practice of devotional service, we have to learn. And there's also Vaidhi sadhana bhakti, a subdivision of sadhana bhakti, of devotional service and practice. Vaidhi means according to the rules and regulations. So just like in Vaidhi sadhana bhakti, you have to do certain things. You have to get up early in the morning. You have to chant some rounds. You have to chant your rounds. You have to read the Shastra. And in general, you have to obey the orders which are coming from the spiritual master, particularly from scripture and the senior devotees like that. This is Vaidhi sadhana bhakti, the practice of devotional service according to the rules and regulations. You know, the alarm goes off in the morning at 4, and your mind, your conditioned mind, immediately tells you, immediately it says, oh no, don't tell me I have to get up again. Oh, this is terrible. So this is the conditioned nature. But sadhana bhakti, Vaidhi sadhana bhakti, means you have to get up anyway. So you give your mind a couple of little, you know, sort your mind out a bit, apply a little pressure, and then you get up. Even though your mind said something else, but you know what is the right thing according to the rules and regulations, so you do it. So in terms of etiquette, how we behave, the standard of our personal activities, it's also like that. That we have to learn what are the right things to do and what are the wrong things. And then we have to very scrupulously avoid the wrong things and do the right things. You know, it's not as easy as it might sound, but that is the principle, that is the idea. And we have to practice. For example, some people say that, you know, they are waiting for some spontaneous desire to arise within themselves to chant, for example. They don't want to force themselves because they feel it's artificial. But we tell them, no, you should just do it anyway. Just like we said, we should get up in the morning, we should do it anyway, even if the mind objects. So we should do like this. We should do the right thing carefully and avoid the wrong thing, even though the mind may object, in terms of our behavior. Like, for example, someone may insult you. Someone may insult you and tell you you are just some sort of silly nonsense, something like that. And then you may feel, if it was just up to your feelings, what spontaneously comes out of you, you might feel like turning around and telling them the same sort of thing, isn't it? Or as they say in Chatsworth, particularly Unit 3, Unit 2, Unit 3, give the person a good what happened. Am I right? This is natural. Or, you know, if you're another type of person, if you're more withdrawn and introverted, you might want to just run away and cry or something, isn't it? And then mope and sulk. But this is not the etiquette. This is not the behavior. This is not the way we conduct ourselves. You know, I'll give you a hint. One way, you know, there's so many ways that you could respond to something like that. But one way is, you know, the person's telling you, oh, you're silly, you're useless, you're nonsense, and so on and so forth. One way of sort of, not exactly countering it, but responding at least, is to tell them that actually, you know, I'm a lot worse than what you're saying. I'm so much worse. Are you trying to glorify me or something? Anyway, that'll probably bewilder them a bit. They may stop. But, you know, here's a question for you. What do you think, in terms of personal qualities, what do you think is one of the most, if not the most, important personal quality to have or to be developing if you're to be successful in cultivating proper behavior, proper Vaishnav etiquette? What personal quality? Yes, sir.
Tolerance.
Well, yeah, I was... More important, actually. Yes. Okay, you all got it right. Humility, yes, humility. Humility is not exactly an etiquette. It's a personal quality which may manifest in your behavior. But it's a personal quality as such. So that's a really important one. So yes, Vaishnava etiquette, or the cultivation, making the effort to do the right thing and avoid the wrong thing, even though your mind is telling you something else, this is very important for our development of Vaishnava etiquette, proper Vaishnava behavior. It's very, very important. So therefore, it really is part of sadhana bhakti. It is a sadhana. A sadhana means a particular discipline. Like to get up early in the morning is a sadhana. It's a particular discipline. To chant your rounds nicely is a sadhana. It's a particular discipline. So also, to discipline the mind and not let it just, you know, act in a conditioned, spontaneous way, but to act and get your mind to cooperate so you act properly as a Vaishnava and get used to that, then this is a sadhana also. And this is a very important part of sadhana bhakti. Learn how to be a devotee. So, let's see now. Well, it includes avoiding aparad. As we go on, we'll go a little bit into the subject of aparad, offense. But I think it's pretty self-evident, isn't it? That if you get into an offensive mood towards other devotees, then your Vaishnava etiquette is just out the window already. You've failed. Yeah. So, in other words, to adhere, to learn what are the standards? And then adhere to those standards in your conduct will mean that you avoid at least many of the upper-rads. And here, of course, in our seminar, we're talking particularly about Vaishnava relationships. So if we learn how to deal with the devotees, different types of devotees in different ways, then the first offense particularly we'll avoid, and the third offense is also connected there, the relationship with the spiritual master. Right. So if we are very careful in our etiquettes, how we conduct ourselves, then we will avoid aparad. And that'll be very helpful in our general advancement in Krishna consciousness. Now, as far as the correct etiquette or upholding, maintaining the etiquette, being the ornament of a devotee, there's a very nice description in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Sanatan Goswami is going to meet Lord Chaitanya. And Sanatan Goswami, at that time, he had a very unpleasant skin disease where there were sores and oozing sores, and you know, it was really most unpleasant, and it looked unpleasant. What to speak of having any contact with it was really horrible. So Sanatan Goswami, one day, he had to go and visit Lord Chaitanya at Jagannath Puri. They were there in Jagannath Puri. Sanatan Goswami was in another part of the town, and Lord Chaitanya was at Kashi Mishra's house. So Sanatan Goswami had to go visit Lord Chaitanya. It was midsummer, sort of like this time, or May, in May thereabouts, midsummer. And of course in India, at that time it's really very hot. So Sanatan Goswami, in order to walk to Lord Chaitanya's place, there is a direct route which went right past the front entrance of the Jagannath temple, and then straight on down the same street, and Lord Chaitanya's place was just on the left, on that street. However, Sanatan Goswami, that day, what he did, because he had these horrible sores, he didn't want to walk past the front gate of the Jagannath temple, because the pujaris and other priests and Brahmins and so on, there's dozens or even hundreds of them there, and they come and go quite busily during the day. So he was afraid that if I walk past the front entrance, some of these pujaris and Brahmins running out, running in, carrying things for the service of Lord Jagannath, they may brush against me. And if they brush against me, then maybe some of this, you know, the liquid or whatever, pus or something like that, horrible stuff from these sores, it may touch their bodies or touch their cloth. And this would be, you know, they might not notice, and they might then just carry on serving Lord Jagannath, but with this stuff on their bodies. Oh, so Sanatan Goswami was feeling this would just be too horrible. So what he did, he took an alternative route, which took him just around, basically, out onto the beach, and then along the beach, and then in from the back, more or less like this. But now the thing is, it was midsummer. And you know how hot the sand is on the beach, you know, when it's 45 degrees. Oh, it's just too hot. It's just too hot. So he was walking on that sand barefoot, and actually his feet became blistered. And then he came around from behind and came to Lord Chaitanya's place. So Lord Chaitanya was looking at him and saw these sores on his feet, and he asked him, what happened? And Sanatana Goswami said, well, it was the sand on the beach. So hot, it's just red hot. And Lord Chaitanya asked him, well, why did you go on the beach? You know, that's a roundabout way. Why didn't you just come down the main road past the temple? So then Sanatana explained his fear that he might have bumped into one of the priests, and this would have been an offense. So therefore, even though it meant great personal discomfort, but he took this roundabout route and just tolerated the pain and so on. So Lord Chaitanya was so happy. He said, my dear Sanatan, although you are the deliverer of the entire universe, and although even the demigods and great saints are purified by touching you, it is the characteristic of a devotee to observe and protect the Vaishnav etiquette. You know, this is just in terms of etiquette, or just in terms of anything. This is an excellent time to turn off your cell phone. If that was a cell phone. It's a very good time. Yes, so, even though Sanatana Goswami, he was more advanced than those pujaris and priests from the temple, but still, he didn't want to upset things, so he came around the long way at his great inconvenience. So Lord Chaitanya was so extremely pleased. And, well, eventually Lord Chaitanya grabbed him and embraced him, would you believe? So on Lord Chaitanya's body there was all this stuff from his sword. Isn't that amazing? And Lord Chaitanya was so happy. But then, of course, well, you know, Lord Chaitanya is Lord Chaitanya. So when he did that, he embraced Sanatana tightly. And Sanatana was saying, no, no, don't do it. Lord Chaitanya told him, I'm purifying myself. But then when he released Sanatana's body was completely healthy. That skin disease just disappeared. Just like that. Anyway, that's, you know, very special circumstance. So Lord Chaitanya glorified him for upholding the Vaishnav etiquette, the proper standards, even though for someone like him, it could have been argued that he didn't even have to bother about it. But still he did it. So, to act like this, Lord Chaitanya said, to uphold the Vaishnav etiquette is one of the ornaments of a devotee. Now, as a devotee advances in Krishna consciousness, and, you know, they dive deeper and deeper into Krishna consciousness, then one example which is used to illustrate what is going on is that the devotee is becoming spiritually enriched. Spiritually enriched, purified, and like this. The heart is becoming cleansed, love for Krishna is coming, the devotee is becoming spiritually enriched. Now, any rich person You know, unless they're some sort of eccentric or miser, something like that. Any rich person, you can see it, isn't it? In their clothes, their motor car, their jewelry, their house, and all their paraphernalia, usually. So, like this, you know, rich people, it's, of course you get some eccentrics, but generally a rich person, their richness will be manifest in the trappings and just the way they live. So with the devotees, the manifest form of their advancement is there in different ways. One is their detachment from material things, that's one thing. Developing love for Krishna, always serving Krishna. But these good qualities, very good personal qualities, a very wonderful behavior, maintaining very wonderful standards of personal conduct, these are the natural ornaments of the devotee as the devotee advances. More and more these qualities come out and decorate the devotee. In other words, if we have a devotee who is, you know, what was the word? Boorish. Vulgar. You know what I mean? That uncouth type of devotee who uses, you know, sometimes uses bad language. Or if these ornaments are there, then you know that there's a lack of real cleansing going on. Even though the person may be some sort of Krishna conscious workaholic, possibly, and doing so many things, but if the good qualities are not coming, then it means it's not really working as it should be, as it could be. Yeah. So if we see in ourselves that these types of personal attributes are there, then this should be like a warning sign. I'm doing something wrong. So, as the devotee advances, then naturally these good qualities come. Of good behavior, good character, good conduct in very natural ways. And in this way, the development of Vaishnava etiquette is like symptomatic of the advancement of the devotee. So it really is a very important part of Krishna consciousness. And without it, we should understand our Krishna consciousness may not be so well balanced. You know, we may be working hard for Krishna, doing so many things. So on the devotional service side, you know, there's a lot there. But if the personal qualities are not there, on the other side there's no weight of the presence of personal qualities, then there's some imbalance in our Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So, let's see. Now, when we get our books tomorrow, there's a whole list of basic etiquettes, but we'll go through that tomorrow. Now what I'll do, I'll give you some examples of etiquette so you can see how it works. Get some idea how it works. Some examples of etiquette and lack of etiquette and how they bring different types of results. one classic, and it's my favorite, I suppose. It's one of my favorites. It's really very special. Is the story of Ramachandrapuri. Put your hand up if you know the story of Ramachandrapuri. A few of you. Okay. Well, actually, it's also the story of Ishvarapuri. Yeah, because there are two standards. One is of the wrong etiquette in the case of Ramachandrapuri, and the other is good etiquette in the case of Ishvarapuri, and then how they got two different types of results. So they were both disciples of Madhavendrapuri. Madhavendrapuri was a very, very great devotee. Actually, Madhavendrapuri, he descended from Goloka Vrindavan in order to begin the mission of Lord Chaitanya, to put down the roots for the mission of Lord Chaitanya, of giving Vraja Bhakti. Anyone here knows who Madhavendrapuri is in Goloka Vrindavan? Yes. Nandu. Well, he's a Kalpa Vriksha tree. Kalpa Vriksha. Kalpa means desire and Vriksha means tree, actually. So Kalpa Vriksha. He's a wish-fulfilling tree in Goloka Vrindavan. So he came here to start the mission of Lord Chaitanya, set the scene. So he was a really great devotee. And he had many disciples. Advaita Acharya was one of his disciples. Lord Nityananda is one of his disciples. And he also, Ishvarapuri and Ramachandrapuri. So, in his later days, Madhavendrapuri, he was in the process of passing away. And he was incapacitated. He was bedridden. So, Madhavendrapuri, he was lying there. And he was in a mood of great separation from Krishna. Great separation. There's one very beautiful prayer by Madhavendrapuri, which he learnt from Radharani. And I don't know if I remember the whole thing. Any of you know that prayer? Special prayer? Ai dina dayajanathe maturanatha kadavalokyase hridayam twad aloka kataram dayata brahmyati kim karomyaham. So, Madhavendrapuri was lamenting that, oh, I'm so fallen. I'm so fallen, but you're the Lord of the fallen, the master of the fallen, and protector of the fallen. But I'm so fallen. You're the master of Mathura, but I failed to achieve Mathura. I failed to achieve Vrindavan. I failed to achieve your lotus feet. So now, Kim Karomyaham, what am I meant to do now? What should I do? So in this mood, very transcendental mood of deep separation, he was lamenting. Of course, that lamentation is transcendental, but certainly externally, it looked like lamentation. So now, these two disciples, Ishvarapuri and Ramachandrapuri, they were there, particularly Ishvarapuri was there, rendering personal personal service to Madhavendra Puri. Even Ishvara Puri, he was, because Madhavendra Puri was completely incapacitated physically, so Ishvara Puri was cleaning up even his stool and urine with his own hands. And he was not thinking that, oh, why do I have to do this? This is so dirty and horrible. He was in ecstasy. And he was just singing and chanting in ecstasy. So, Madhavendra Puri, he was very happy. And he blessed him that you may achieve love of God. Then there was this other Ramachandra Puri. So Ramachandra Puri, he came as so many devotees were coming because they knew the great Madhavendra Puri is going to pass away. So Ramachandra Puri came also. And he was a disciple and he thought, so what shall I do? I should do something here to help. So there he is, he's watching Madhavendra Puri lamenting, I failed to achieve the goal of life. And Ramachandra Puri thought, I know how I'll serve him, I know how I'll help. I'll give him some good advice. So he told Madhavendra Puri, he said, why are you lamenting like this? Why are you becoming so emotional? You should stabilize your mind and fix your mind on the impersonal Brahman. You know, for the devotees, Kaivalya Narakayate, Prabodhananda Saraswati said, that impersonal liberation is just like hell. It's just like hell. You can't serve Krishna. You can't do anything. So it's just like hell. So, but this was Ramachandra Puri because he was not, he didn't know how to conduct himself. And, you know, he was an envious person, actually. So he expressed himself like this. And Madhavendra Puri got so angry, he told him, you get out of here right now. If I see you when I die, I don't know where I'm going to go. So you just go. And Ramachandra Puri went out. And of course, you know, as is the case, when people are envious and proud and arrogant and, you know, offensive, he was thinking, what was his problem? I gave him some good advice. This is terrible. So he justified. This is Maya. So now, the two of them then, they, in terms of etiquette, in this case, in relation to the spiritual master, they conducted themselves in two different ways. One was very nice, and the other was really not nice. And they got two different results. So here, you know, we'll see how this is very important in practical terms, because there are results which come to everything that you do. And if you commit offenses, you'll get a certain type of result. But if you really do your best to conduct yourself nicely, you'll get another result, a good result. So, Ishvara Puri, he developed love of God as Madhavendra Puri had blessed him. And not only that, but he became such a great devotee that Lord Chaitanya, accepted him as his spiritual master. So, you know, because of pleasing his spiritual master, getting that blessing through serving so nicely, behaving so nicely, then it came to this. Love of God, and he became accepted, appreciated so much by Lord Chaitanya. The Lord accepted him as a spiritual master. Ramachandrapuri, though, he was in this state of mind like a know-it-all, and he was actually senior to everyone, older and senior in terms of years as a devotee, and he was a sannyasi also. He lived to an old age. Ishvarapuri passed away before him. So Ramachandrapuri, knowing that he was so senior and a sannyasi, he decided, okay, I am going to do a particular type of service for the devotee community. I am going to help all the devotees by giving them good advice. I'm just going to make that my specialty. I will go around and I will watch everyone and correct them to help them. He was thinking like that. And this is what he did. He would go around and, you know, the devotees would be, his favorite actually was, it would be lunchtime, the devotees would be sitting having lunch and he would call in. Just call in. And they'd ask him, please come, sit and take prasad. And he'd say, no. I just came for the association. So he wouldn't eat, but he'd watch. And he might not say anything, but he would note how much everyone ate. And it, you know, and then later he would call them up on it. There's one nice description of how he invited Jagannanda Pandit for lunch and fed him Jagannath Mahaprasad. And Jagannanda came to the point where he had sufficient, so he said, thank you, that's enough. And Ramachandrapuri said, what? Are you refusing Jagannath Mahaprasadam? What sort of devotee are you? And Jagannanda felt, oh, Hare Krishna, I better take some more. So he sat down and took some more until he just couldn't eat more. Then he excused himself. But Ramachandrapuri, he said, aha, I had heard that the followers of Chaitanya eat too much. Today I have seen it with my own two eyes. So you couldn't win. Probably you know this story. Yeah, this was Ramachandrapuri. And he thought he was doing great. He thought he was just doing fine. And, you know, this is what happens when people become influenced by Maya in this particular way. They become unable to hear. They become proud and arrogant. They become unable to hear. And even the devotees may try and say something, but they can't hear. And they are convinced they're right. So, you know, it's a long story, but basically, he ended up offending Lord Chaitanya. He decided to go and check out Lord Chaitanya. So he went and he was watching Lord Chaitanya and he made some criticism. So Lord Chaitanya cut his eating in half. Maybe a week or two, some days later, Ramachandrapuri came back. Lord Chaitanya had lost some weight. And Ramachandrapuri noticed and said, What is this dry renunciation that you're doing? This is not proper for a sannyasi. So Lord Chaitanya cut his eating in half again. Anyway, it's a bit of a long story, but Ramachandrapuri was just searching to find some fault with Lord Chaitanya. Eventually he saw some ants crawling in the corner of the room, and he deduced that there have been sweets here. The sannyasi, so-called sannyasi, has been eating sweets. Shame, shame. So Lord Chaitanya was really not happy. And he reduced his eating so much. And one of the older devotees, Paramananda Puri, who was also a contemporary of Ramachandra Puri, came and told Lord Chaitanya, "No, you don't need to worry about this man. He's just, that's the way he is. Just do as you normally do." And he told Lord Chaitanya, "There are two rules in this regard. One rule is you shouldn't criticize. The other is you shouldn't praise. So the first rule that you shouldn't criticize, the first rule you should never break. But the second rule that you should never praise or glorify, you can break that rule sometimes." Yeah. So we don't criticize the devotees, but we glorify the devotees. Not empty flattery, of course, but we can express our appreciation. So eventually Ramachandrapuri just wandered off again and left everyone, and life came back to normal. But I think you get the idea, right? That it really matters whether we follow the etiquette or whether we don't. It actually makes a difference. It's not just a matter of mechanically acting in one way or another way. It's not. It really matters. It really makes a difference. And there are real consequences. So this story is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita to illustrate, the author, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, says, to illustrate the difference which is there if a person gets a benediction from a great personality or another person gets some chastisement, or not chastisement actually, but more like a curse, something like that, really displeases, either really pleases or displeases a great personality. So Ishvara Puri, by his wonderful behavior, he pleased so much. Madhavendrapuri got a wonderful result. Ramachandrapuri got another result, and he became a Mayavadi. Now, of course, one little point to bear in mind is that Ramachandrapuri, even though he seems like some really like crazy materialist or something like that, really weird person, but actually he's a very special person. So don't, you know, in your mind start thinking now, get into some meditation about what a nonsense Ramachandrapuri is. Ramachandrapuri is in Krishna Leela also. In other words, he's a great associate of the Lord. In Krishna Leela, he is Jatila. But Jatila appears in Chaitanya Leela as this cranky old Ramachandrapuri. Yeah, so that's another example. Yeah, we shouldn't criticize. Well, you know, the only person who's allowed to criticize is either the father, well, the parent, actually, or the spiritual master. The Prabhupada made the point that the spiritual master can chastise his disciples, and parents can chastise their sons. Now, I don't know. Do you know Madan Mohan from Ermelo? Do you know his daughter, Vishaka? She's like 6 or 7 years old now or something. So going back actually like a couple of years, when she was maybe, I don't think more than five, maybe even just like four or so, they were listening to a lecture of Prabhupada, a lecture tape, and Prabhupada made this point. You can only chastise your sons or your disciples. So a few days later, Madan Mohan, she did something he didn't appreciate. He chastised her. And she told him, wait a minute. Don't you remember what Prabhupada said? You can only chastise your sons. Yeah, so either you have to wait till you have a son or two, or till you have some disciples. Otherwise, you can't chastise anyone, okay? You just got to keep a cool head. This is where humility comes in. Yeah. But Prabhupada said, actually it's interesting in terms of etiquette, that the spiritual master, not only is he allowed to chastise if he feels the urge, but he has to. He has to. It's an etiquette. Yes, of behavior for the spiritual master. He must chastise. Otherwise he's going against the etiquette. Yeah, and doing something detrimental. Prabhupada said, if you want to spoil a son or a disciple, then just pat him on the head and tell him, oh, what a good boy you are. You are just very nice. And you're guaranteed you'll spoil them. Prabhupada said that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he would just always chastise his disciples. I mean, not always, but he would quite often. And Prabhupada said he would tell them, you nonsense, you rascal, fool. Prabhupada said all sorts of good words. And one time Prabhupada was in like a darshan or class, maybe a class of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He was sitting, Prabhupada was right at the back. And there was one elderly gentleman right next to him who was hard of hearing. And every so often that old man would ask Prabhupada, what did he say? What did he say? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was at the other end of the room. So Prabhupada would turn and say, well, he said this and this, like that. After a while, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta stopped and just looked at Prabhupada and said, Babu, would you like to come and sit here and speak right in front of so many people? And Prabhupada, you know, obviously we can just imagine, you know. We can just imagine the experience. But Prabhupada said that even though it was very difficult for him, but afterwards he treasured that experience. And he never forgot that experience. Not that he just felt out of place, or not, you know, like embarrassed and foolish, or even worse, you know, why did he have to say that? I was just trying to help. You know, that's even worse. No, but he felt very happy that I got some mercy. So, yeah, so that's an etiquette. The spiritual master has to do that. It's his duty. But what's the etiquette for the disciple? To rationalize and justify? And think so many reasons why it's not really like that. No. The etiquette for the disciple is to accept it. Even one of Prabhupada's very, very close assistants told me long time ago, just after Prabhupada left this world, he told me he was with Prabhupada And Prabhupada would just, from time to time, I mean time to time like every day sometime, different times though, every day, Prabhupada would just come and just chastise him for something. And even if he hadn't done anything, Prabhupada would chastise him. And he was kind of a very forward person, this disciple. So one day, he said to Prabhupada, you know, I know I'm your disciple and I should be very humble, but, you know, you just chastised me, but actually I didn't do that. I actually didn't do it. And Prabhupada said, no, I know that. But it's just, you need it. You need it for your false ego. Right. So the etiquette for the disciple is just to humbly accept and in this way become purified. Okay, so now, do any of you have any questions so far? If there are, do you think you could write your questions down on a piece of paper? Actually, I should have told you earlier, shouldn't I? You've all seen, you've all got pieces of paper. If you have a question, just write it down, and in a couple of minutes, okay, we'll have a look at some questions. So now, the next thing is that we said the nature of the seminar. Yeah, so if you want to ask a question, just write it down now, okay, and just pass it in and we'll have a look at them. The main part of our seminar is in terms of Vaishnava relationships. So the way that I propose to do it over the following three evenings is that all of us, we all have someone who's senior to us. We all have someone who is sort of equal to us in terms of Krishna consciousness and like experience in Krishna consciousness, time in Krishna consciousness. We all have someone who's senior to us. We all have someone or a few who are kind of equal. And we all have at least one person who's junior to us, even if you just walked in here today for the first time. Well, you know, in other words, there's no one junior to you here. But maybe tomorrow night there'll be someone will also walk in for the first time, so now you'll have someone junior to you. But basically, generally we have people who are senior, people who are equal to us, and people who are junior to us. So we're going to try and focus in this context of how we relate with people who are senior, equal, and junior to us in different contexts, and how we should behave. What are the ways of reciprocating with people who are junior, senior, whatever to you. In this way, how we can get our etiquettes together with different types of Vaishnavas. Because there's one verse here I can just mention which gives the basic idea, more or less, coming from a certain perspective. Krishnaiti yasya giritam manasadriyeta dikshasti chet pranatibis chabajantami sham shushrushaya bhajana vigyamananyamanya nindadi shunya ridam ipsita sangalabdhya. One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who's undergone spiritual initiation and is engaged in worshipping the deity. And one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who's advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. So, this is giving a little idea that junior people we may honor within our minds, people who are equal, we may offer our obeisances to, and people who are really senior to us, then we faithfully serve them and associate with them, means inquire from them. So we have to learn how to do these things, like in terms of the different people we're dealing with. Because if you do the wrong thing with the wrong person, then it may all sort of become a little upside down. Yeah. Like, you know, you ask a question of someone senior and you give advice to someone junior. You know, this famous story I imagine many of you have heard of, when Prabhupada was there for the opening of the temple in Amsterdam, and the devotees were doing everything wrong, and Prabhupada was really getting upset about it. Finally, there they were, they were about to have a fire sacrifice, everything was ready, but there was no fruit. There's no fruit, you meant to have some fruit around there to decorate. So Prabhupada asked the president, "Where's the fruit?" And the president ran into the kitchen and said, "Prabhupada wants the fruit, where's the fruit, where's the fruit, where's the fruit?" They quickly, within 2 minutes or less, cut up a beautiful fruit salad, which, if you're not aware, for a fire sacrifice you use whole fruits. So he came running out with this very nice big bowl of fruit salad, said, "Here, Prabhupada, here's the fruit." So this was too much for Prabhupada. So, of course, Prabhupada's always transcendental, but Prabhupada, he just didn't say it, just didn't react. Harry Sori, who was with Prabhupada a lot, told us that when Prabhupada was angry, he would chastise, it was hard to take. But when Prabhupada was really angry, he wouldn't say anything. And if you understood, you know, that this was how he worked, when Prabhupada didn't say anything, it was worse. So Prabhupada didn't say anything. He just looked down. Then he just looked to the side. So as it happened, there was one hippie boy standing right like here. And he was a bit of a devotee or something. He had his beads and he was chanting away and watching what was going on and seeing Prabhupada becoming more angry. And then finally Prabhupada just got sort of fried in a sense and just looked aside like, "Huh, I've had enough." In the direction of the boy. The boy leant over and in a knowing type of way said, "Prabhupada, just chant Hare Krishna." So Prabhupada gave him one of those looks. Like, you know, "Who are you?" And Prabhupada picked up his beads and started chanting Hare Krishna. Because, you know, you can take gold from a dirty place. Yes. Right, so that's a very good example of what not to do. You know, you don't take advice from some person who's, you know, not experienced in Krishna consciousness. You don't take advice from them. I mean, if you're not capable of giving them advice, which, you know, you may not be, then don't try. That's okay. But don't take advice from them, and don't give advice to people who are clearly senior to you. Yeah, it's not the etiquette. So, like this, we're going to delve into these subjects, Dadati Pratigrinati Guyam Akyati Prichati Bhunte Boja Te Chaiva Shadvidim Pratilakshanam. Different ways of having exchanges. You can give a gift, you can accept a gift. You can reveal your mind, you can listen when someone reveals their mind. You can give prasad, you can accept prasad. These, Rupa Goswami says, these are six standard ways of reciprocating and interacting with devotees, but you've got to know how to do it right. Yeah. You know, like, there were a few times when devotees came in, like real new devotees, they figured out that Prabhupada gets the best prasadam around here. So they would come in when Prabhupada was taking prasadam and ask if they could have some. This is not how we do it, you see. It's the wrong angle. So in our little course the next few nights, we'll try and go into some of these subjects. How to deal with different types of devotees in different types of situations to do things correctly and avoid doing things wrong. And in this way we can progress. Now, did any of you write down any things there for any questions? Explained how to deal with criticism from the spiritual master or your parents. What about criticism amongst the devotees at the Sunday program, for example? And how does one identify who's equal or higher or lower? Right. Yes, so, you know, this is the sort of thing we're going to be talking about. You know, people are criticizing you. This is an important etiquette. Make a note of this one. If people are criticizing you, then, well, we mentioned earlier, didn't we? Now, you could always thank them. You know, thank you. You're really helping me break my terrible false ego, my puffed up sense of importance by showing me that I'm not as important as I think I am. You're my friend. Or something like that. But otherwise, generally, we would just ignore that. Generally, we just not ignore that. And not get into a whole defensive thing of, no, I'm not like that. I'm a good person, actually. I have many good qualities. No, we should just not respond. This is an etiquette. If, though, you hear someone criticizing someone else at the Sunday feast, I mean devotees, then, well, it depends, you know. If the person who's criticizing is senior to you, you would deal with it in a certain way. If they're equal to you, that you deal with it generally in a different way. And if they're junior to you, you deal with it, well, maybe in the same way, but also maybe in a different way from the person who's equal to you. You know, just to give you a basic idea, if the person who's doing the criticism is senior, then you as the junior should not suddenly jump in and try to correct. But you should refer to someone who is equal or superior to that person and inform them and let them deal with it in whatever way they see fit. Right. If the person's equal to you and, you know, the relationship is suitable, that, you know, someone who normally listens to you, then maybe you could say something. But if they're not, they're equal to you, but not the sort of person who you have some relationship with and who you can talk to, then again refer it to someone senior. But if they're junior to you, then, you know, you can try to correct the situation nicely like this. There's a basic idea of how to deal with criticism at the Sunday program. And how does one identify who's equal or higher or lower? Well, You know, a very simple rule of thumb is in terms of how long the person has been a devotee. This is just a very simple idea. If they've been a devotee longer than you or been initiated longer than you, then they're senior to you. For about the same length of time, they're more or less equal. Not so long, they're more or less junior. So that's a very simple rule of thumb. Of course, another way of looking at it is in terms of relative spiritual advancement. You know, if someone is, they may have not been a devotee a long time, but they may be very advanced. But see, the problem with that is, then you have to start psychoanalyzing the devotees. And that may not be so easy to do, particularly if you're not very advanced. Yeah. And you may make some mistakes. And if you just get into that sort of mood, you know, you're kind of moving in the direction of becoming a criticizer, you know, like this Ramachandrapuri, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, that he had achieved the level of nishta, which means fixed, steady in criticism. Yeah. He was fixed in criticism. He would not really do anything else, and you couldn't deviate him from his program of criticism. Yeah, so if we get into psychoanalyzing, you know, this person's been a devotee a lot longer than me, but they don't jump up and down in the kirtan like me. So maybe they're not as advanced as me. So, you know, unless there is something like glaring, really, really clear and obvious, like, you know, the person who's meant to be senior, you see them later on smoking a cigarette. I mean, that's a bit extreme, perhaps, but, you know, unless there's something really, really clear which shows and, you know, confirmed by others that this person who's meant to be senior, but actually they're in a deteriorated condition spiritually, then otherwise we should just to take it like this, junior, in terms of initiation or years in Krishna consciousness, as a rule of thumb, is the best way to go, frankly. And even if a person is senior but they have become deteriorated, you know, unless they've become demoniac and, like, you know, anti-Krishna consciousness, if they're just in a fallen condition morally, breaking principles, still we should be very careful how we deal with them. And, you know, we should be very careful about putting ourselves above anyone, above people, you know, unless they're clearly our juniors. Even then, even if they're our juniors, but our mood is, like they have a very, they put it in a very nice way in the Bhakti Vriksha program. The leader of the group is not just the leader, he is the servant leader. So first he's the servant. So even when there's someone junior to us and we may be trying to help them, which is the right thing to do, if we see they need some help, we should try to help them. But in the mood of serving them, not that, you know, here comes me, I know so much, and this, I will help this little person here. No, but in the mood of serving. But also understanding this is a junior person. So I have to treat them like this. It's the right way to do it. Okay. A parent can chastise a son. What should parents do about their daughters? Yes. Well, you know, there is a science of correcting children. You know, like in the Western world particularly, correcting children up until recently meant that it doesn't take long before the stick comes out. Yeah, in the Western world. Doesn't take so long. You know, you try a few times to speak to them. that it's not long before you pull out the stick and hit them. But in the Vedic society, they would never hit the children. Even they wouldn't hit the boys. Yeah. They didn't use violence. So one has to learn how to deal with the daughters. Like Prabhupada said, with the son, once the son gets over about 5, 6, 7 years, beyond that up to 16 or 17, said the parents should treat him like, the parents should be like tigers. Like tigers. But with the daughter, then one has to learn how to do it very nicely, very sweetly, and in this way, correct. Not that she just runs amok and no one says anything. No, it has to be said, but it has to be said very nicely. How's that? Is that okay? But once they get over 16, the boys, once they get over 16, then Prabhupada said they have to be befriended. When the parents had to stop the program of the, you know, heavy discipline and all that. He mentioned that humility is a personal quality which will manifest in our behavior. What can we do in our sadhana so that this quality will manifest? Well, of course, it just tends to manifest anyway as a byproduct of good chanting, careful chanting like that. The one thing you can do, well, you can always pray to Krishna that, you know, I must have many faults, but the problem is I'm so stupid I can't see them. Please give me the eyes to see them. And then Krishna, you know, he is so kind. If we pray like this, Krishna becomes very kindly disposed, and suddenly you'll find in front of your eyes, you'll see that you're doing many things wrong, and that you have many faults, and that you hadn't noticed before. Yeah. So we should pray to Krishna. Help us to see what are our shortcomings. And we should also look a little more carefully to see what are our shortcomings. Because you have to have something to be humble about. You know, humility means you're humble about for some reason. Yeah. So in other words, you have to be able to see some faults in yourself. Otherwise, what have you got to be humble about? So, you know, the good thing is that, don't worry, we all have plenty of things to be humble about. That's the lucky break for us. But what we need are the eyes to see them. Yeah. So we pray to Krishna and we try to see, understand our shortcomings. Gradually it'll become clearer. And then we'll see, actually it's a fact. Actually I am a fallen soul. I'm not just some very clever person at all. And then a natural, real feeling of humility can develop. Okay, well there's one here about the daughter, I think we answered that. It is explained that an offender should beg forgiveness at the feet of the devotee he offends. How should a male aspiring devotee beg forgiveness from a person in a female body? As a male should not touch the body of a female. How does he get forgiveness and dust from the other's feet? Yes. Well, you know, the procedure is the same. The procedure is the same, that you must go and beg forgiveness and offer your obeisances. So men, don't just think that, you know, we men are better than the ladies, so we can't offer our obeisances to them. No, we can, and we should, particularly in this situation. And you may not touch their body, that's okay, but, you know, at least within your mind, you can take some dust from their lotus feet and really sincerely beg for forgiveness. Earlier you stated that a lack of cleansing is due to one performing incorrect actions How does one identify what is being done incorrectly and resolve the misdeed? Well, you know, another good way, like this is related also to becoming humble. Another good way to get some insight into your shortcomings is to ask some of the devotees who you happen to know well and have a confidential relationship with. If you ask them that, you know, I really want to improve, so if you see I'm doing something wrong, please do tell me. Please do tell me, because I really want to learn. Sometimes it's said that the devotees are like mirrors. We can see ourselves in this way, in that they may tell us how we are. You know, we cannot see ourselves. You need a mirror to see yourself. So therefore it's very difficult often to correct ourselves. But the other devotees are like mirrors, and they can give us some insight. And so therefore we can appeal to the devotees. Please help. Please help me. And even you can explain if there's some sort of thing going on within you and you would like to understand more clearly what the significance is or how to deal with it, then you can ask the devotees about that. Suitable devotees. This is something you can ask someone who's equal, who's a friend, who's close to you. Or you can ask someone senior also who knows you and who's close to you. Okay, devotees, I see time has marched on, so we'll finish here and let's have a little kirtan to finish. Okay, all right, let's have a little kirtan to finish. Srila Prabhupada ki.